Before Rosa Parks, there was another Rosa Parks, a Memphian named Ida B. Wells. Wells was a schoolteacher turned journalist turned activist. Predictably, her anti-lynching articles and speeches enraged Southern whites. But Wells refused to back down. Check out the whole story on this special rabbit hole edition of Blues Out. Ida B. Wells, the truth about lynching. Ida B. Wells was born a slave in Holly Springs, Mississippi, her birth coming just 6 months before the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863. Her father, James, was a carpenter on the Bowling Plantation, and her mother, Lizzie, a house servant. When the Civil War ended, Lizzie insisted that Ida and all her siblings go to school, believing education was a silver bullet for improving the status of Southern blacks. After both of her parents died in the yellow fever epidemic of 1878, Ida B. Wells moved to Memphis. She taught school on the south side of town, near Beale Street, only to find her classroom torched every time racial tensions erupted. In 1883, she took a teaching job in Woodstock, Tennessee, 40 miles north. And on September 15th, Wells boarded the Chesapeake, Ohio and Southwestern Railroad with a 30-cent first-class ticket. The nation's first separate but equal law had just been passed in Memphis, so there were separate cars for coloreds and whites. When Wells entered the first-class colored car, she found a drunken man smoking. Both practices were prohibited in first class, but widely ignored in the car reserved for blacks. So Wells decided to claim her first-class ticket in the car reserved for whites. When she offered conductor William Murray her ticket, he refused it and told her to leave the whites-only car. Wells refused. Murray insisted. When Wells refused a second time, Murray tried to physically remove her, tearing her dress in the scuffle. Wells anchored down and fought back, scratching and biting Murray hard enough to draw blood. Several passengers soon joined Murray in dragging Wells out of the car. Refusing to enter the colored car, Wells stepped off the train in Fraser, Tennessee, to the cheers of white passengers. When she got back to Memphis, she found a lawyer and sued the C&O Railroad, a right that had been afforded to blacks in the 1847 Civil Rights Act. Before the act, African Americans held no standing in the nation's legal system, except, of course, as defendants. The Memphis Morning Paper reported, quote, "The case of Ida B. Wells, a colored teacher in the city schools, against the Chesapeake, Ohio and Southwestern Railroad for $1,000 damages for refusing to allow her to ride in the ladies' coach after she paid a first-class fare, was on trial in circuit court yesterday. Judge Greer appearing for the plaintiff." Commercial Appeal, November 20, 1884. On Christmas Eve that same year, case number 8149 was adjudicated. Judge Pierce of the Memphis Circuit Court awarded Ida B. Wells $500 in damages from the C&O Railroad. She never saw a penny, though, because the Tennessee State Supreme Court would overturn the ruling for damages. Wells consolidated her notoriety from the case with her interest in investigative journalism and began a newspaper called The Free Speech. She had the only black-owned printing press in Memphis, located in the rear of Beale Street Baptist Church. Her writing quickly gained national recognition and was reprinted across the country. Wells didn't attack whites. Instead, she advocated for education and took on powerful African-American leaders whom she saw as not doing enough. She was frequently chastised by the black community for being too critical, and advocating for black education enraged uneducated Southern whites. Wells also had a self-righteous streak to her journalism. She broadly suggested that several teachers lacked moral integrity and had only gotten their jobs by, quote, friendly association with the white men on the school board. In a more direct incident, she outed a black school teacher, Hattie Britton, for having an affair with the white school board lawyer. When the woman's family confronted her for staying out all night, Britton shot herself, and Wells was fired by the school board over the incident. By 1892, Memphis had emerged as one of the nation's wholesale grocery centers. The supermarket as we know it today would be developed there in 1916 with the birth of Clarence Saunders' Piggly Wiggly chain. In 1889, Tom Moss, Calvin McDowell, and Will Stewart opened a black-owned store called People's Grocery, located in a South Memphis neighborhood called The Curve at the intersection of Mississippi Avenue and Walker, just west of Elmwood Cemetery. Their store was pulling business from white-owned grocers, and it didn't sit well. Several clashes erupted, culminating in Moss, McDowell, and Stewart defending their property against a white mob, shooting several of the white attackers in what came to be known as the People's Grocery Riots. The white grocery owners called the whole incident, including the store itself, a conspiracy against whites. The press described it as an ambush by the black community. Moss, McDowell, and Stewart were arrested. Predictably, a masked mob seized the men from the jail, took them to the C&O railroad yard, and shot all three. The final words of Tom Moss were reportedly, "Tell my people to go west. There's no justice for them here." Wells had been close friends with Tom Moss, and her editorials on the lynching so enraged the white community that the Office of the Free Speech and her printing press were destroyed. Wells, who was out of town at the time, was warned that she would be assassinated if she ever returned to Memphis. In response, she wrote a widely distributed article called The Truth About Lynching. Her writings drew the ire of the Memphis press. The morning paper wrote, quote, "The fact that a black scoundrel is allowed to live and utter such loathsome and repulsive calamities is evidence as to the wonderful patience of Southern whites." The evening paper, thinking a man had written the piece, said he should be tied to a stake at the corner of Main and Madison, branded on the forehead, and castrated with a pair of tailor shears. Memphis blacks were questioned and beaten by whites wanting to know where Wells was. There was talk of lynching her on the courthouse steps. Exiled from her hometown, Wells took her message on the road. She became an impassioned anti-lynching lecturer, speaking in San Francisco, Chicago, Des Moines, New York, and Brownsville, Texas, among dozens of other U.S. cities, north and south. In 1893, she wrote A Red Record, examining lynchings in America, and published a pamphlet called Southern Horrors, Lynch Law and All Its Phases. She publicly contradicted the position that lynchings were only carried out against those guilty of crimes, pointing out that the Southern press often inflamed the passions of the mob and incited lynchings for little more than sport. She documented one case in Tunica, Mississippi, where the sheriff had caught his daughter having sex with a black man. He urged a mob to lynch the man to save her reputation. She even took the message to Europe, her efforts financed by Frederick Douglass, among others. In England, her message was so persuasive that a committee was appointed to investigate the matter throughout the UK. The fact that Wells was no longer in Memphis didn't matter. Local papers didn't take kindly to airing their dirty laundry abroad. The Memphis Commercial Appeal published an openly racist article calling her a, quote, "notorious Negro courtesan," courtesan being a polite company word for prostitute. The article accused her of lecturing and lying about Memphis, referring to her as Sapphira, the woman who dropped dead after lying to St. Peter in Acts chapter 5. But Wells didn't back down. She spent the rest of her life fighting injustice of all sorts. A staunch supporter of female voting rights, Wells is one of a few black women included in Susan B. Anthony's History of Woman Suffrage. After decades of exposing the truth about lynchings in the South, Ida B. Wells died on March 25, 1931, in Chicago, a few months short of her 69th birthday. And the story of Ida B. Wells' 19th century fight for justice and civil rights is still ongoing in the 21st century. Thank you for listening to American Entertainment Works Blues Alley. If you're able to support us, you can buy us a coffee on Ko-fi. It's not expensive, and you'll be helping us tell more stories about American culture. That's ko-fi.com/American Entertainment Works, all one word. You'll find a link to our Ko-fi page in the episode notes. American Entertainment Works is a not-for-profit corporation located in Nashville, Tennessee, so your contributions are tax-deductible. The Blues Alley opening and closing themes were written by Uptown Al, as was this episode. Additional episode music was performed by The Cave Dwellers and AE Works recording artist Jim Holthauser. Bumper music was written and performed by Jonathan S. Anderson and Uptown Al. For a transcript and a list of sources for this episode, visit aeworks.org/bluesalleysources. I'm your storyteller, Uptown Al. Thank you for listening. to Blues Alley.